Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's not often these days that I get a Los Angeles dog trainer correction worth reading on the radio. But here's one. And it marks, in some way, the farewell, at least from this broadcast, to a longstanding institution at the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, the Hot Properties column, which I think is going out of business. Like the paper, it's the March 2 Hot Property column in the real estate section reported that Nancy Daly Reardon's house had sold for a Malibu record-breaking price of $68 million. In fact, the house has not been sold. The story also, well, anyway, Los Angeles Dog Trainer, correction for you. Ladies and gentlemen, the Department of Defense has approved a policy to let at least some of the 275 or so, we don't know for sure, detainees at Gitmo speak by telephone with their family. I have no projected timeline for implementation, but it is currently being developed. That's Pentagon speak from Army Lieutenant Colonel Edward M. Bush. No relation. Nobody in that family is in the Army. Who is a spokesman for Gitmo. Yes, Gitmo has a spokesman. Why do you ask? So, the way to do it is to get them all to be on Charles Barkley's Fave Fives. I don't know if Fave Fives count that high. It's good news, it's bad news, ladies and gentlemen, when you sign up for cable these days. Charter Communications in Los Angeles says it's going to sell information it collects about the viewing preferences of the cable TV customers it takes money from. Here we go again. Copyright your life. It's taking information about choices you're making. So that information is worth something. Those are choices you make. Copyright them. Then, if they want that information, they can buy it. Charter has agreed to provide Nielsen Company with data from those subscribers' digital set-top boxes. Or you could just blow up the boxes. No, I'm not. Please. That was a hypothetical. And we don't deal in those. In an effort to give advertisers and TV programmers a clearer picture of what people are watching. Now, the good news, of course, is that this will be the first time these numbers are real, as opposed to Nielsen ratings, which are Nielsen ratings. But on the other hand, they know what you're doing. And this myth did not make most people's news agendas this week, almost 32 years after, to the day after President Ford created an intelligence oversight board made up of private citizens with top-level clearances to ferret out illegal spying activities. President Bush has, now here's a multiple choice, A, strengthened it, or B, issued an executive order that stripped the board of much of its authority. Very good. The White House did not say why it was necessary to change the rules governing the board. The order was issued late last month, this being now middle of this month. Never too late to find out stuff that's secret. It's quite clear the Bush administration officials who were around in the 1970s are settling old scores now, says senior legislative counsel to the ACLU. Ford created the board following a 1975-76 investigation by Congress into domestic spying, assassination operations, and other abuses by intelligence agencies. The probe prompted fierce battles between Congress and the Ford administration, whose top officials included Dick Cheney. This is from the Boston Globe, by the way. The board's investigations and reports have been kept secret. But in 1996, the Clinton administration published a report faulting the CIA for not adequately informing Congress about putting known torturers and killers in Guatemala on its payroll. Hey, they wouldn't do that now. Hey, what's the matter with you? Under the old rules, whenever the oversight board learned of intelligence activity that it believed might be unlawful or contrary to executive order, it had a duty to both notify the president and to notify the attorney general. Bush's order deleted the notification order to the Justice Department. because, you know, they might prosecute. The order also terminated the board's authority to oversee each intelligence agency's general counsel and inspector general, and it erased a requirement that each inspector general file a report with the board every 3 months. So, your cable system knows more about you. You know less about the intelligence activities of your government. I'd say we're even. Hello, welcome to the show.
Shear, I'm going to get you.
Thank you, Katie Couric. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry, the aforementioned Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, That is so wrong. That is so very wrong. Here's how right it could be. You see? See how we do? It's time for me to read the trades for you, is the point of the whole kerfuffle. And kerfuffle it isn't. How come there isn't a breakfast snack called kerfuffle yet? It's like a combination cereal kind of sandwich, you know, like old Wheat Chex kind of thing, and a waffle. Kerfuffle. You're welcome. But that's not what I'm going to read from. I don't know where. Good Lord. That's the tangent trap. A couple of things from the trades, actually. Yes. First of all, group ends boycott over Ford's pro-gay ads from Brandweek. I'll read it for you. The American Family Association, not an association of families, has ended its two-year boycott of Ford over the automaker's advertising on websites and in publications geared toward the gay community. Why? You have to wait to the next paragraph to find out. The conservative group confirmed this week that Ford has met all of the conditions presented by the group in fall 2005, shortly before the boycott began, over Ford's practice of offering benefits to same-sex couples and marketing efforts in the gay community. The AFA, based in Tupelo, Mississippi, singled out Ford as the company which has done the most to affirm and promote the homosexual lifestyle way back when. Some Ford dealers, particularly in the South, said the boycott affected their sales. AFA Chairman Donald E. Wildman, not Wildman, Wildman, declined an interview request, but said in a statement the original agreement between the AFA and Ford contained four conditions. First, Ford ceases advertising on gay websites and throughout gay media outlets, including magazines, television, and radio, in the U.S., with the exception of $100,000 to be used by Volvo. The Volvo ads would have to be the same ads used in the general media and not specifically aimed at the gay community. Second, Ford would not be able to renew current promotions or create future incentives that give cash donations to gay organizations based on the purchase of a vehicle. Third, Ford would be prohibited from making corporate donations to gay organizations that engage in political or social campaigns to promote civil unions or same-sex marriage. Last, Ford will stop giving cash and vehicle donations or endorsements to gay pride parades. Ford says its principles haven't changed and that it's ready to move past the AFA's decision. Quote, we're committed to treating everyone fairly and with respect, including our dealers, customers, and employees, says Ford rep Jim Kane. Some publishers targeting gay consumers are feeling the heat. Quote, the AFA has made my life very, very difficult. They have scared the crap out of some of my advertisers. Unquote, Joe LaMaraglia, founder of GayWheels.com. I guess the AFA is now going to be monitoring those Volvo ads. From Media Daily News, an update on the digital TV transition. Nervous federal agencies and lobbyists have upped their efforts to get digital converters into analog TV homes. Now, the National Association of Broadcasters recommends those boxes be sold in grocery stores. NAB President David K. Rare says grocery stores are crucial for distribution of the boxes, especially in rural areas where analog TV sets are plentiful. You rural people haven't gone digital? What's the matter with you? He worried, did David K. Rare, that larger consumer electronic retailers might not have locations in rural areas. There's no Best Buy? No Walmart? Rural areas? I thought that's where they... quote, particularly in rural areas, we need to make certain that stores convenient to all households will be able to participate in the converter box coupon program. Under current rules and procedures, only those retail stores with at least a year's experience in consumer electronic retailing can sell the digital converter boxes. Those rules were put in place to avoid possible waste, fraud, and abuse by non-accredited retailers. This week, the FCC approved rules requiring stations increase their on-air marketing efforts to let consumers know about the digital changes coming next year. And finally, from Computer World, a student at the University of Virginia has discovered a way to break through the encryption code of radio frequency ID chips used in up to 2 billion smart cards. They're only used to open doors and board public transportation systems. Karsten Noll, a grad student working with two researchers in Germany, said the problem lies in what he calls weak encryption in a major RFID chip. Now that he's broken the encryption, Noll says he would need only a laptop, a scanner, and a few minutes to get the crypto key to an RFID door lock and create a duplicate card to open it at will. And according to Ken Van Wyk, security analyst, that is a big security problem for users of smart cards. It turns out it's a pretty huge deal, he says. There's a lot of these things floating around out there. Using it for building locks is the biggie, especially when it's used in sensitive government facilities. And I know, he says, for a fact, it's being used in sensitive government facilities. Unquote. Van Wyk told Computer World that one European country has already deployed military soldiers, the best kind of soldiers, to guard some government facilities that use the chip in their smart door key cards. They recognize, he says, they have a huge exposure. They're deploying guards is expensive. They're not doing it because it's fun. They're safeguarding their systems, unquote. He declined to identify the European country. Switzerland! No. Good guess. Just another thing to worry about, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But there's more to worry about. How's that nuclear waste deal going? Because it's safe, clean, plentiful, cheap. As long as you get rid of the waste. So, British nuclear assets are going on sale to the private sector to help the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority raise cash to help pay for its $140 billion nuclear waste cleanup bill. That's how cheap it is. Ladies and gentlemen, it only costs $140 billion to clean up the nuclear waste in little old Great Britain, which has some of the world's oldest nuclear sites. Vintage nukes. 14 plants have closed and are being decommissioned. The clearing of contaminated sites is behind schedule. Who would have expected that? There's a need for funds and the sale of these assets, British nuclear assets, the same ones that caused the problems in the first place, is seen to be a solution. The assets are spent nuclear fuel. Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in buying that. Energy Department officials in this country are trying to promote nuclear power by suggesting that private industry assume some responsibility for the country's nuclear waste. So, two countries with but a single bad idea. Edward F. Ward Sproat says the idea could ensure more stable management and financial support for the long-delayed Yucca Mountain nuclear waste dump project in Nevada that he manages. He's tired of working for the government. I read that to mean, quote, I do think that providing some sort of an organization with legislative fiat that provides that stability and fixes some of these institutional problems is a good idea, he said. But he added, quote, but it's got to be done right, unquote. Well, I'm glad somebody pointed that out, because I was thinking, let's do it wrong, as I'm sure many of you were. But Ward Sproat put us on the right path. He heads the Energy Department's Office of Civilian Radioactive Waste Management. Because, you see, this stuff is only going to have to be kept safe for 10,000 years. And, heck, I know corporations that have been around for almost 80. Not about waste, but about nukes. A U.S. government-led, this is from New Scientist. That's what we need, a New Scientist. A U.S. government-led plan to design small nuclear reactors for deployment to developing countries is continuing, despite ongoing fears about security and proliferation risks. The Bush administration has budgeted $20 million in the new budget towards efforts to design nuclear power plants in the 250 to 500 megawatt range as part of the Global Nuclear Energy Program, or GNEP. GNEP, everybody! This is the first money in the program since President Bush announced it in February 2 years ago. GNEP hopes to begin construction of its first reactor in a country currently without nuclear power in about 8 years, saying the plants will provide a clean, safe source of electricity. These will be deployed in a responsible way that is safe and secure and offers the lowest possible risk for proliferation, says Daniel Ingersoll of GNEP. Countries that build the reactors would have to agree to use nuclear power for civilian purposes only. The load of fuel might be sealed, and it lasts the lifetime of the reactor, so it becomes like a disposable gadget with a non-replaceable battery, says Elena Sokova of the Center for Nonproliferation Studies. At this point, there are no proliferation-proof reactors. If a country develops a reprocessing program, then they have the ability to turn the fuel into plutonium needed to make a bomb. I said, a bomb. The light water reactor designs proposed for GNEP require spent fuel to be stored on-site for several years before radiation levels are low enough for shipping, she points out. And perhaps she might also ask, shipping where? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it just gets better because the atom is our friend. Remember that? It's still true. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. With friends like those, I don't need molecules. As the nation's demand for ethanol drives record corn production in the Midwest and increased fertilizer runoff into the Mississippi River, shrinking the annual dead zone that forms in the Gulf off Louisiana's coast will be practically impossible, according to a report from the National Academy of Sciences that you probably didn't hear about. Study is one of several released in the past year that analyzes the relationship between biofuel production and nutrients that eventually flow into the Gulf of Mexico. The researchers from the University of British Columbia and the University of Wisconsin created a series of models to show how ethanol production goals set by Congress will dramatically boost the amount of nitrogen flowing into the Mississippi River system. Fertilizers from corn and other crops in Midwestern states wash into streams and rivers from the farmlands, funneling large amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus into the Gulf. They combine with sunlight to fuel explosive algae blooms in the Gulf that cloud the waters and suck up the oxygen, thereby asphyxiating marine life. The resulting dead zone causes fish to either flee or perish. Hey, that's a good game show. Flee or perish! Last year's dead zone measured about the size of New Jersey. No, we just picked New Jersey as kind of a spatial. No implication that that's a dead zone as well. The nitrogen runoff into the Gulf could increase by 10 to 18% if farmers meet the congressional mandate of producing 15 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol by 2022. Corn is not the only crop that can be used, but Archer Daniels Midland likes it that way, don't they? According to their ads. And it's by far the most widely used in the United States so far. Corn just happens to require more artificial fertilizer than other crops, such as soybeans, producing more nitrogen runoff. Is this the only show on the air not funded by Archer Daniels Midland? Just wondering. This report comes just weeks after a federal state dead zone task force approved a plan meant to reduce the dead zone to a fraction of its size by 2015. So that's not going to happen. But wait, there's more news from outside the bubble. From the British newspaper The Telegraph, the United States has dropped China from its list of the world's worst human rights violators, offering the communist giant a propaganda coup ahead of the Olympics. This at the same time that China has killed at least 30, so far known, of the Tibetan protesters in Lhasa, the capital of Tibet. The U.S. State Department's human rights report removed China from that category. No reason was given. China has been a partner in talks with Washington to remove a nuclear plant from North Korea. That's going well, in case you haven't noticed. North Koreans are slow walking. The State Department report acknowledged that China's overall human rights record remained poor, describing alleged torture, including the use of electric shocks and beatings. There's an account of a prisoner strapped to a tiger bench, which forces the legs to bend, sometimes until they break. So they're poor, but not worst anymore, for a while, yet. In case you're wondering how different Europe is from the United States, two examples from outside the bubble. In Europe, airlines are going to be forced to compensate many more passengers for delays and cancellations. This is from the Times of London. That sounds foreign, doesn't it? The European Commission is going to close loopholes in the law governing the aviation industries. Passengers will find it much easier to claim up to $1,000 for a canceled flight and to obtain free meals, phone calls, and hotel rooms during long delays. That sounds so European, doesn't it? What the hell happened to freedom? Airlines will no longer be able to dismiss claims by arguing that staff shortages or maintenance errors had prevented them from operating the flight. And here's the other example of how different Europe is. Western governments must talk to terror groups, including Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, if they hope to secure a long-term halt to their campaigns of violence. This according to the man who, for more than a decade, was Tony Blair's most influential advisor. Now, of course, like an American, he waits until he's out of office to say that, but he still can you imagine? Yeah, you can. This is from The Guardian. Jonathan Powell is widely regarded as having been instrumental in negotiating a settlement in Northern Ireland, you know, like Hillary, said his experience in the province convinced him that it was essential to keep a line of communication open, even with one's most bitter enemies. He says, there's nothing to say to Al-Qaeda and they got nothing to say to us at the moment, but at some stage you're going to have to come to a political solution as well as a security solution, and that means you need the ability to talk. And finally, news from outside the bubble. From the Independent newspaper, a group of leading scientists, including the world-famous Jane Goodall, have attacked the advertising industry for exploiting chimps as, quote, frivolous subhumans who can be viewed as objects of fun and ridicule for the sake of commercial gain. The quote ended at the end of the word subhumans. Dressing up chimps in human clothes or making them perform everyday activities gives people the impression they are not a species in danger of extinction, yet they're just as threatened as a gorilla or as the orangutan, the scientists said. They want the practice banned, and their argument has been so effective they've managed to convince the publishers of the journal Science to withdraw its own series of ads showing chimps reading the respected publication. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A chimpalicious feature of this broadcast.
In the evening, when the kettle's on for tea, an old familiar feeling settles over me. And it's your face I see, and I believe that you are there. In a garden, when I stop to touch a rose and feel the petals soft and sweet against my nose, I smile and I suppose that somehow maybe you are there. When I'm dreaming and I find myself awake without a warning, and I run. rub my eyes and fantasize. And all at once I realize it's morning. Myself awake without a warning, and I rub my eyes and fantasize, and all at once I realize it's morning, and my fantasy is fading like a distant star at dawn. My dearest dream is gone. I sometimes think there's just one thing to do. Pretend the dream was true and tell myself that you are there.
One house, three candidates, 27 surrogates. Project Campaign. Every week a new primary. Every day a new challenge for Jeremiah.
Rich white people don't have to deal with these phones.
Geraldine.
You know, you wouldn't be saying that if you weren't black. Just call Verizon.
And John.
You know, I thought the Catholic Church was the great whore till we tried to get some extra bandwidth from Verizon.
And every week, one gets exit polled out of the Project Campaign house.
Samantha!
Samantha.
Samantha.
Samantha, darling. Girlfriend, it's back to Harvard.
Project Campaign. Finally, reality gets a vote.
See, that's the way to do it. Clear the way off these newscasts. What's going on with Iraq, you might ask? Well, General Petraeus, who you would expect to say that we're making good progress, says Iraqi leaders have failed to take advantage of the reduction in violence to make adequate progress. He says no one, quote, no one, unquote, in the U.S. and Iraqi governments feels that there has been sufficient progress by any means in the area of national reconciliation or in the provision of basic public services. Basic public services, ladies and gentlemen, water, electricity, things like that. The general comments appeared to be his sternest to date on Iraqi's failure to achieve political reconciliation. So the surge worked, huh? Yeah, that's a good surge. The Shiite-led government of Prime Minister Maliki has won passage of some legislation that aids the cause of reconciliation, drawing praise from the president. But the Iraqi government, according to the Washington Post, has deferred action on some of its most important goals, including laws governing how the oil revenues will be divided, that the Bush administration had identified as necessary benchmarks of progress. Many Iraqi parliament members and other officials acknowledge the country's political system is often paralyzed by sectarian divisions, but they also say American expectations are driven by Washington considerations and do not reflect the complexity of Iraq's problems. It's complex? They didn't tell us that. But wait, there's more. An exhaustive review of more than 600,000 Iraqi documents that were captured after the 2003 invasion has found no evidence that Saddam Hussein's regime had any operational links with Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terrorist network. Attention, Chris Hitchens. This is from the McClatchy newspapers. This study was only sponsored by the Pentagon. Oh, you know, the Pentagon. Of course they'll say that. Did confirm that Saddam's regime provided some support to other terrorist groups, particularly in the Middle East. However, his security services were directed primarily against Iraqi exiles, Shiite Muslims, Kurds and others he considered enemies of his regime. The new study found no documents indicating a direct operational link between Iraq and al-Qaeda. The study is entitled Saddam and Terrorism, Emerging Insights from Captured Iraqi Documents. It was essentially completed last year and has been undergoing what one U.S. intelligence official had described as a painful declassification review. I know it hurts me just to read it. It was produced by a federally funded think tank, the Institute for Defense Analysis, under contract to the Joint Forces Command. Spokesman for the Joint Forces Command declined to comment until the report is released. Well, there's a wrinkle. Because on Wednesday, the Pentagon canceled plans to release the report. Rather than posting it online and making officials available to discuss it, the Joint Forces Command said it would mail copies of the document to reporters if they asked for it. Hey, a revival of the Postal Service just for this special project. Says Navy Captain Dennis Moynihan, no relation. Spokesman for the Joint Forces Command, we're making the report available to anyone who wishes to have it and we'll send it out via CD in the mail. He withheld further comment. So, I'll ask for it. They'll send it to me, won't they? Sure they will. And my mail service is good. I like my mailman. Ladies and gentlemen, Dick, who has been sent to the Middle East on a peace mission? No. No, she already went. No. It's U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. He left today hoping to revive the battered peace process as only he can. And get Arab allies like Saudi Arabia to do more to curb Iran's influence in Iraq. He's gone for 10 days. Relax. No, don't relax. But another report indicates that the vice president is being sent to raise concerns about the high price of oil. He's going to meet with King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia, the world's biggest oil producer and the leader of OPEC. Obviously, we want to see an increase in production, says Dana Perino, and I don't think she's talking about features. We think more supply would help, says the White House spokeswoman. So, Dick Cheney, I think we know what his mission is, and I think we can even imagine how it's going to go.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history. Dick Cheney, Confidential. Confidential. At this point in an administration, you can't help looking back from time to time. Sure, I've made mistakes, everybody has. I thought a guy we rescued from a failing aluminum company like Paul O'Neill would have the good sense to keep his yap shut and not write some schoolgirlish tell-all book that, last time I looked, couldn't even crawl onto the 99-cent shelf. But no decision has made me any prouder than the one I made shortly after selecting myself as vice president to have nothing to do with the economy. As much as I'm not enjoying having to haul my secure undisclosed behind all the way over to the Middle East for my peace mission, I'd enjoy even less staying in Washington dealing with the plaintive bleats of a Wall Street crowd that's losing its nerve more quickly than Nancy Pelosi at a tailgate party. Of course, it's always a challenge to defend the proposition that in an entrepreneurial society there are winners and losers. Well, most of the people you're talking to are the losers. But nobody said any of this would be easy, except for the part about Iraq. Speaking of which, our friend the Saudi king wasn't exactly welcoming me as Richard of Arabia. I had only the regular guest VIP bedroom at the palace. Not the Vegas suite. Message received. But after he gifted me with a traditional Saudi headdress in which I regretfully refused to be photographed, his son, the prince, poured us some of that motor oil the Saudis call coffee. And we got down to splitting the short hairs. Tuesday, 10:17 a.m.
Your accommodations are to your satisfaction, Mr. Vice President?
Your Majesty, if I wanted to be someplace with only 34 cable channels, I could have stayed at home. Look, this is being billed as a peacemaking trip. The way I see it, it means Your Majesty has to help me make some peace.
Oh, Mr. Vice President, I've got something that's rising in value that you're paying for with something that's falling in value. Not a position of strength, I'm guessing.
You know, I'm kind of like John McCain. I'm still working on the economics thing. Seems to me if we're selling you jets, well, you subsidize the training of the next generation of Islamo-fascist extremists at so-called schools. Maybe we do have some chips on the table. Excuse me, Prince?
Yes?
Yeah. Another packet of equal, please.
Oh, we only have sweet and low.
You see, Mr. Vice President, even a great oil kingdom can't always grant every whim of the great visitor from the West. I'm making a connection between your coffee.
I know what you're doing. Here's what I'm doing. I'm betting that 18th century coffee table can have those little dings buffed away. Now, Your Majesty, this isn't something I like to do, but I've got some transcripts of wiretaps here. Come from our friends at the Secure Undisclosed Intelligence Agency. And the wiretaps suggest your government really has no intention of establishing an embassy in Baghdad and appointing an ambassador to Iraq.
Sir, you insult both of us. You need no wiretaps to know that we're not going to do that. I told you that personally last year.
Yeah. Funny thing about me, I don't trust face-to-faces as much as I trust wiretaps. Mm. All right, look, we're pissing away the better part of $1 billion on an embassy building in Baghdad. Can't have much of a diplomatic row with just one embassy, can we?
Oh, I would have thought with what you were paying, you were putting up all the embassies in Baghdad.
You know something, Your Majesty? If I didn't like you so much personally, I'd be having some trouble right now not going over to the dark side on you. But let me suggest this. Mm-hmm. We've got a perception problem here. Any of us fly into Baghdad? It's a secret mission, ThreatCon 7 level security, the whole bit. Ahmadinejad flies into Baghdad. Trip's announced weeks in advance. They're selling tickets to his appearances on the internet. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A perception problem.
And you think I can make it easier for you to visit Iraq?
No, sir. Mm. You can talk to the Iraqi government about making it look harder for Ahmadinejad to visit. More security, less publicity. Just the optics would help.
Maliki is not responding to you?
Our plate's kind of full with him right about now. I think he might welcome hearing about this from someone else.
Well, Mr. Vice President, as you know, this is not a one-man government I am in charge of. I have a lot of cousins.
No, I know. Let me just say, we believe in the process. Well, speaking of perception problems, mm-hmm. you know better than I do that nobody's been more supportive to the replateauing of petroleum prices at an enhanced level than I have. But not even ExxonMobil can keep thriving when the whole economy's tanking around them. Gotta have a little more emphasis on the production side, don't you think?
Well, here again, sir. My country is but one member of OPEC.
Very big, important member.
And the production quota question is, as you know, quite complex.
Yeah. You know, King, I'm not the kind of person to make threats. Threats bore me. Mm-hmm. But if we have to give the same kind of military consideration to the other major oil-producing countries that we do to your country, just to get a vote to raise the quota, we might have to consider pushing that particular button.
That's all you want? A vote?
Not just a vote. A vote vote.
A vote vote. I'm sorry. Sorry, I don't...
It's an Americanism. A vote in our favor.
And for that, no one else in OPEC gets our level of...
military consideration. It may be the highest form of respect known to civilized man. Shame to lose it. Hard to get it back.
Well, obviously my cousins and I have a lot to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And you shall have the full 200 channel package in your room.
Thank you, Your Majesty. If you want copies of the intercepts just for, you know...
I'm fine. We already have them.
It's easy to play it cool when you're sitting on $100 a barrel oil. We get it down to 80, and our friend Mr. Abdullah is going to start singing the high notes again. End of partial diary for the middle of March 2008. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential. Confidential.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, first of all, I think we're familiar enough with this one. We can recite it along with him.
I have acted in a way that violates my obligations to my family and that violates my or any sense of right and wrong. I apologize first and most importantly to my family. I apologize to the public, whom I promised better. I do not believe that politics in the long run is about individuals. It is about ideas, the public good, and doing what is best for the state of New York. But I have disappointed and failed to live up to the standard I expected of myself. I must now dedicate some time to regain the trust of my family.
It'll be about 1,000 years, don't you think? Senator Hill, that was former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, engaging in the politics of ideas, the idea being, let's send the hooker down on the train. Deadline Washington, Senator Hillary Clinton apologized at an evening forum sponsored by the National Newspaper Publishers Association, a group of more than 200 black community newspapers across the country. I want to put Bill Clinton's comment about the South Carolina primary in contrast. She said, you know, I'm sorry if anyone was offended. It was certainly not meant in any way to be offensive. She then apologized for Geraldine Ferraro's comment. I certainly do repudiate it, and I regret deeply that it was said. Her third conciliatory statement of the evening was apologizing for the response of the United States after Hurricane Katrina. Quote, I've said it publicly and I say it privately. I apologize and I am embarrassed that our government so mistreated our fellow citizens. It was a national disgrace, she said. Unquote. The fact the government built the levees that failed apparently wasn't a disgrace. Just a happy accident. Dateline San Luis, Colorado. Mormon church officials have again apologized to the town of San Luis after church missionaries were accused of desecrating a Catholic shrine. Photos on the internet showed three young men holding the broken head of a statue, preaching from the Book of Mormon at an altar and pretending to sacrifice one another. A delegation from the Mormon church told the San Luis town board the church is ashamed and disappointed. We have also arranged for a meeting with Catholic leaders to offer our apologies, says the church statement. The church expresses its profound regret and sincere apologies to the Catholic Church. Dateline Sydney, Australia. An Australian magazine apologized this week to readers and troops serving abroad for publishing the story revealing that Prince Harry was fighting with British troops in Afghanistan. New Idea magazine said when it ran the story in January, it was unaware of the secrecy agreement. The story eventually resulted in Prince Harry being sent home. New Idea did not explain the source of its story and indicated it did not check with British military officials before publishing. Magazine apologized to its readers and to troops and their families who serve abroad. Saying he hadn't slept well in days, Los Angeles school superintendent David L. Brewer told parents at Markham Middle School he's investigating how a policy and system we have in place failed when an administrator previously investigated for allegedly having sex with a student was transferred to another school. The administrator, assistant principal Steve Thomas Rooney, was arrested last week and charged with 5 counts of forcible lewd acts on a 13-year-old student. I am deeply, deeply sorry for this incident, Brewer told a gathering of parents and students who'd come to hear the explanation of why Rooney was transferred despite the allegations. Deeply. That's two deeplies. From a camera person on a TV truck in Austin, Texas, an apology for driving the live truck after doing a story on the reopening of a drag strip, down the drag strip in a slow speed race with a live truck from another TV station. Rick Cabrera says, I took full responsibility and apologized profusely to station management. Did we make a mistake? Definitely. Do I wish I could take it back? Certainly. Unfortunately, I can't. But I do want my fellow co-workers, redundancy, alert, and my bosses to know I'm sorry and I wish they didn't have to deal with the backlash resulting from my poor judgment. Oh, sorry, not Austin, El Paso. Most importantly, I want our viewers to know how sorry I am. I've spent 9 years in El Paso trying to be a good citizen and rep my station with dignity and integrity. I didn't do that last week. I will always regret it, says Rick Cabrera. And finally, Southwest Airlines has changed its defiant tone in the original statements it made to the press when news first surfaced of its failure to comply with mandatory safety inspections on dozens of its jets. The carrier voluntarily pulled 38 of its planes from service, and we apologize to the FAA, says the spokesperson for Southwest. We acknowledge we can do better. All right, then. There's the challenge. The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature in this broadcast. And now one other item from outside the bubble. For people wondering how Pakistan's doing, our ally Pakistan, our stable ally Pakistan, here's a report from a correspondent from Australia's Australian Broadcasting Commission.
Well, that's right. On the face of it, Pakistan is an unsafe place to be. The last 12 months has been a bombing on almost a weekly basis. 600 people have died, and today in Lahore, in the city where the PCB is based, two bombs went off. The toll of people killed in that has risen in the last few minutes to 23 people. One of the bombs went off at a government building in downtown Lahore, the other in a posh upmarket neighbourhood, quite close to the home of the Pakistan People Party's leader, Azif Ali Zardari, the widower of Benazir Bhutto.
So let's keep our eye on Iraq. What do you say? Because nothing's happening anywhere else. By the way, the cost for cleaning up nuclear and hazardous waste contamination at U.S. weapons complex now slated at $305 billion, and it may take until 2062 to finish the job, more than 20 years longer than original estimates. So take those nuclear estimates with some radioactive salt, won't you? Mildly radioactive. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 shortwave, on Mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radio. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like having a disposable nuclear plant in the neighborhood if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Harryshearer.com is the destination for all sorts of things, including finding out what music is played on this broadcast and getting the email address of this broadcaster. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks for helping with today's broadcast. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.